Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Then we have minutes for this month. So now we're on public forum, and we do have some folks.
I have nothing to say.
Nothing to say. Well, welcome.
Except hi.
Hi.
Oh, yeah, I'm pretty sure. Oh, thank you. All right, well, that was fast.
Okay, so we're not going to move right at the moment to the 10-year plan on ending homelessness because Connie isn't quite yet. She might be thinking it's 4:30. So, is that right?
Well, no, she knows that it's 4, but originally we had planned for her to be here at 4:30, and so I don't know that she had other scheduling things. I just told her to get here when you can get here, and we'll just go from there.
Thank you.
Well, then.
So, can I just ask a question? Or
yeah.
So I brought up, the Bellingham, Washington, and this idea of a housing levy, and I was wondering if maybe, Linda, you could look into that a little bit and maybe just educate us on maybe the path a little bit to how did they get to a housing levy. I would like to be just educated a little bit on how does that happen. Now, they're 4 times our size, I understand.
Well, it's also Oregon law versus Washington law.
Yeah, right.
So you'd have to look at what is the Oregon law, which does allow now for cities to do levies. But we'd have to have some information on that.
I just would like some education, and I think that's a very good point. So with considering Oregon, Washington, and understanding it a little bit better. I remember also at one point you had said, maybe I misunderstood, but it sounded like that a city like Ashland could actually choose to combine 5 years of money from, like, the trust fund.
Well, from CDBG.
Oh, from CDBG. Mm-hmm. So you could actually take 5 years and then use it as a chunk.
Yes.
Different things. So,
okay.
That's an interesting concept.
Yeah.
you'd want a chunk project at that point.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. So maybe if we're at that point. Okay, Erin. Hello.
It's our new pastor.
Congratulations.
Yeah,
you just did your
thing.
You. So.
You what?
We mentioned your ordination.
Oh, sweet.
So we've already approved the minutes, and we're not going to
do. Revised them.
Thank you.
It was highlighted on the second page what was finished.
So we're getting ready to go to number 4, which is the CDBG consolidated plan process.
Did we want Dennis to do his liaison report before Connie comes? Because if you have to leave at 5 and Connie comes,
well, we sort of talked about that. Do you want to do it up front? Or
do whatever you tell me to. Whenever you tell me.
Well, I think we ought to go to this, and then recognize when he's going to be.
Mine is going to run right into Connie's, probably. That's my thought, is it will take all.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So.
It only takes a little bit of time anyway.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody. Good to see you all. Thank you for your work. For those of you that don't know me, if there's anybody here, Dennis Slattery, Washington City Council. Don't throw anything. Let's see. You know pretty much where we've been. We've come through a budget process, a challenging month. We managed to keep the trust fund intact. There are people picking at it, as you may know. People with other ideas of how that might be funded and made the case, and for now won the day as far as keeping the current funding process, funding mechanism. But what we have coming up next, there's Connie out there, by the way. I don't know if she's
The door's open.
What we have coming up next is we're going to probably have a special meeting on July 8th to talk about 2 proposed ad hoc committees, one of which will be a in quotation marks. Some people don't like the term, so I put it in quotation marks, revenue enhancement. Ad hoc committee that will look at ways of funding things and mechanisms for doing so. You might not be surprised that there's lots of competition out there for the term levy at this point. It certainly is a process that's available to people. But there's going to be not only the Ashland competition, but the county is also looking for use of a levy to fund the jail, the new jail, of which, by the way, I am on that committee. I do meet with them on July 8th. July 8th would be a busy day to talk about how we potentially help them design longer-term diligence to mental health and addiction services. And, my concern, having voted against the jail, putting the jail levy out to a vote, I do think people should have the opportunity. I don't want people to, I don't want to misrepresent myself, but I don't think that they've spelled out what they mean or how they're going to stay consistent on over a longer term period on mental health and addiction services within the context of the county jail. And so we're going to, I volunteered to work on that committee to meet with them, and so we'll see how that goes. But there's going to be lots of competition for levies and stuff like that.
Is there anyone else from Ashland Council or other?
I believe so. I think Tanya is, but I'm not sure. Okay. The first meeting's on July 8th.
Okay.
I haven't turned my full attention to that yet. So the other ad hoc committee will be one that I'm pushing for, which is a cost containment, cost reduction, deep dive into costs and seeing what we can do with some of the bigger items. It's not going to be revisiting the budget, but the best example is the ambulance service, which we pay a considerable amount of money for out of the city budget. And there are competing interests out there that might contend that they can do it for a lot less. So we have to take, we'll take a look at that. So those two things are coming up. And you'll want to pay attention because whether it's on the cost side or the levy side, as you know, we have lots of people that have lots of ideas on how whatever monies are made available can be spent. So vigilance.
Are the July 8th, is the city July 8th meeting at city council chambers?
Yeah. It's not
evening?
Yet set.
Not set.
I'm probably out ahead of myself.
Okay.
It's been proposed.
Okay.
And I might be, I just got asked today if the 8th worked. So they're going around to see if council, if they can, you know, councilors can make the 8th, because it would be a special meeting. Very special meeting.
So everybody needs to pay attention to the city page online to see when it comes out. Okay.
The other jail committee meeting on the 8th, is that a public meeting or is it closed?
I imagine all such meetings must be public meetings. I can't imagine that they, I don't know for sure, but I would imagine.
In the paper, you're talking about the jail?
Yeah.
The sheriff said he didn't want it open. But I don't think that was the final decision.
I don't know for sure. To me, it should be, but right. I'm not running the meeting.
Where would you guess it would get posted if it was to be posted for the public?
Why don't you say, would somebody send me an email? I will ask him directly,
cool.
And we can decide. He might not have a room that's big enough to accommodate the meeting. The committee itself is.
Big,
yeah. It's going to be hard to keep people out of that meeting.
Yeah, I think
okay.
Be well served to.
Thank you. Yeah. I just heard. I'm not even sure from who exactly, but from somebody who usually knows quite a bit about the subject, that there was going to be a certain amount of this committee made up of what they called concerned citizens, as in like people who were not necessarily elected representatives or people involved in the police department or sheriff's department. And I was just wondering, is there anybody such as that involved in the committee, to your knowledge, or is there anybody in charge of appointing somebody outside of this?
It's a big committee. I would put in quotation marks concerned citizens. I like to remind people that just because they got elected does not remove me from being a concerned citizen.
Yeah, for sure.
So there's an awful lot of concerned citizens that are attending this meeting. Just open public. Send me an email and I'd have to take a look. I don't know. I don't even know everybody on the list that I've seen. So I think it's a fairly fluid situation, and I think they're coming. We'll see what happens on. I keep telling people we'll see what happens on July 8th. I kind of don't know that much, except that they have agreed to hold meetings in light of the fact that it did not get passed to the voters, and they're going to look to educate and communicate, and we'll see where it goes from there.
So let me ask this question to the board. Would it be useful if, when we found before July 8th the composition and some information about that meeting, we put that out to people?
So would it be helpful if I emailed Dennis and then he could email me and then I can send it out
right.
to all of you?
I think
just poke me and remind me that I'm going to do that. And then you can disseminate whatever information I get.
Okay. Sounds good.
If it takes a bit, my experience with the county communications is they don't happen very quickly. But I'll do my best.
Okay.
Thanks.
So Connie is here.
She has hanged out.
Hi, great. So Connie from the 10-year plan to end homelessness from the COC, Continuum of Care. Yes.
It's a mouthful.
Excuse me, Rich. I was just wondering if you have any more agendas, any chance?
Yes.
Thanks. And I sent Linda an electronic copy of this. This breaks all the rules of PowerPoint. There's so much information, but it actually feels more as like a booklet on an overview of what has happened in the past 10 years. And so, how did this plan come about? Well, in 2007, the United States Interagency Council on Homelessness encouraged every community in the United States to develop a plan. And between 2008 and 2009, United Way of Jackson County and the Homeless Task Force, which was a committee of the Jackson County Community Services Consortium, it's an advocacy group, worked with other community partners to develop the plan. And then Jackson County Board of Commissioners helped to finance the plan and then adopted the plan in June of 2009. The Homeless Task Force is now one of our 12 work groups under the Jackson County Continuum of Care. And so that's why I'm giving the update today, is that for update years 9 and 10, the COC has taken on that work. And so this plan tried to address the many different faces of homelessness that are in Jackson County. Many people are couch surfing or doubling up with friends or family, car camping, tent camping, or moving all their belongings with them from site to site, wherever they can find a place for shelter. The 10-year plan had 6 strategies, and if you focus on the verbs, you'll see that they were to increase, provide, develop, increase, and develop. And so the number one strategy was to increase the number of units of permanent, affordable, or permanent supported housing, especially for individuals and families who earn at 30% of area median income or less. The second one was to increase coordination between agencies and to integrate services. The third was provide case management so that people who are placed into housing can retain that housing. In other words, to be stably housed. The fourth was provide financial assistance and life skill training, also to help people retain housing. The fifth was to develop and increase sustainable emergency shelter or transitional shelters or permanent supportive housing options, especially for vulnerable populations like youth or domestic violence and sexual assault survivors. And the last was to develop an ongoing community campaign that would highlight all the emerging issues of people who are experiencing homelessness. And so if we look at our first strategy, just how much is 30% of area median income? It's not much. For a household of one, it's $13,650 a year in Jackson County. AMIs are county specific. For a family of four, it's $25,750 annually. And so if we look at examples of housing that was developed for that subpopulation at 30% of AMI, you'll see that most of these were developed in collaboration, many with the Housing Authority of Jackson County. One of those was a collaboration with Rope Retreat. One was a collaboration with Access. One was a collaboration with the City of Medford. There's also been other collaborations, such as between Columbia Care, which is a mental health provider, and Jackson County Mental Health. That was a fairly recent one in 2016. They developed a rental assistance program for people that have severe and persistent mental illness for veterans and for transition age youth. Transition age youth means individuals who are under the age of 24, and often the program is for 18 to 24-year-olds. But most of the housing stock that's been developed here in Jackson County has been at the 50 to 60% of AMI level. So 50% of area median income for a household of one is $22,700 a year. 50% AMI for a household of four is $32,400. So once again, still very low numbers. And if we concentrate on what's happened in Ashland as examples of housing in the past 10 years that fit that annual income level, it would be Snowberry Brook, Hyde Park, and the 64 units that are currently under development with the Housing Authority of Jackson County that should be coming online shortly. Other efforts include increasing VASH vouchers. You may not be aware what those are. They're through Housing and Urban Development, HUD, and they're particularly aimed at veterans, ending veteran homelessness, and they have to be case managed. And so this involves collaboration with the VA and other partners for housing. And one exciting new initiative is that the VA is developing housing in its White City campus. And that housing is going to go in where the former golf course was located. Many people look at the White City campus and they wonder why those buildings aren't being used for housing, because a lot of the buildings are actually empty. And they've been told that retrofitting is just not feasible for those buildings, seismic retrofitting. And so instead of doing it that way, they're going to build new housing out there. And it's already on the boards. One of the things I'm really excited about is an initiative that we began in November. It's called Operation Welcome Home. The Continuum of Care is taking the lead on that. We're working with Access, Rogue Valley Veterans and Community Outreach, Easter Seals, the Veterans Service Office, and the VA. And since November, we have housed 123 veteran households. Primarily, our veteran households that are experiencing homelessness are a household of one. But sometimes there are spouses and children involved.
So is that with vouchers?
We have
or
used
measures,
every way imaginable. We've worked with other housing providers, other agencies that have housing attached to programs. We've worked with agencies that aren't part of the continuum of care. We have 109 community groups that are working with us now. And so some of those placements happened just with scattered site housing. Some happened through HUD VASH vouchers. So it was an assortment. But that's been pretty amazing. And so for the 10 pilot projects in the state that are working to end veteran homelessness, we've taken the lead here in Jackson County and gotten more house and Operation Welcome Home. And we have, you know, the worst vacancy rate. So it's taken an entire village to do that. I want to give another example of a cross-sector pilot project that is happening and has happened this year. It's 2018-2019. The city of Medford took a blighted single family home, and First Presbyterian stepped up and Access stepped up with weatherization, and they worked with a property management company, and now it's a recovery house for women in recovery. So these are all efforts of, to try to reach that, that first strategy. And the city of Medford just this week released the RFP. They have $400,000 available through their Housing Opportunity Fund to create new rental units. I know that you think $400,000 doesn't go very far, but it can also be used for land acquisition and infrastructure and rehabbing the properties. And so we're trying every which way to increase
units. Is that from the excise tax?
I don't know what the income funding stream was for that. But I have the paperwork if any agency here wants to look at submitting a project, and the deadline's the 2nd of August. So our second strategy, I'll try to go through more quickly. Ashland Winter Shelter is a great example of increasing agency coordination and service integration. It looks like they are getting county approval.
We did.
And will be operational. I got the email yesterday. I did my little woo-woo, you know, at my desk.
4:01 p.m.
Yes. It's so exciting, you know, to know that. And been a great effort. Ashland Community Resource Center was opened in 2014. It was a collaboration between Access, the Community Action Agency, the City of Ashland, and Options for Homeless Residents of Ashland. That agency has now changed its name for Options for Helping Residents of Ashland, but the letters still stay the same, ORA. And Maslow has a street outreach team that works with services and referrals going to where people are. And Maslow Project, Community Works, Hearts with a Mission all work within the school districts to provide services to youth that are experiencing homelessness.
Connie, you need to add St. Vincent's because they do a lot of rent vouchers and meet with people close to addiction. And
yes, that's coming up.
Okay.
St. Vincent's is mentioned perhaps not under strategy two, but under one of the others. But if you think it needs to go here, you let me know. Because any updates you want to see to this, I'm happy to put in, especially ones that are Ashland-centric. I'm an Ashlander, so I'd like to see us on the boards here. Our coordinated care organizations, All Care Health and Jackson Care Connect, have worked with many agencies to develop this thing called Southern Oregon Health E, and it's promoting equity and social determinants of health, of which housing is one. United Way convenes regular agency director meetings to try to help with collaboration. And we also have referral services, such as 211, an information referral service. And Community Works Helpline takes all kind of calls. It never closes. It's open 365 days a year, 24 hours a day. And so they're not just taking calls for domestic violence or sexual assault. They try to answer anything that comes across the help desk. I wanted to talk about two projects that are near and dear to my heart, and one of them is the Community Resource Center. We developed that in January through the COC, and so people who are being released from jail into homelessness, they are taken to the community justice building on the morning of their release, and we have people there to hook them up with all types of services. We have navigators to put them onto the coordinated entry list for centralized housing list that the continuum of care has. Addictions Recovery is there to offer addictions treatment. DHS is there to offer benefits, and we have funding structure to pay for identification cards and all those kind of things to get people into programs and job trainings there. People who are living at the Transition Center also can come as many times as they want back to this Community Resource Center. So it's a great collaboration. And also, we developed a resource desk at Providence, a collaboration between Access and Providence, to help people that are at the hospital connect in with services. So you can see that we've tried to hit this at all points. This year also, many agencies are working on the Community Health Improvement Plan, known as the CHIP. The CHIP will then inform the CHA, which is the Community Health Assessment. And
It's the other way around. The CHA informs the improvement program.
I've been in all of them, and I forget which way it goes. The CHA informs the CHIP. But housing was one of the top three needs, and so that will come into the CHIP with an action plan countywide for us to try to implement that. Strategy three is providing case management, and that happens all across the county through the coordinated care organizations. Jackson Care Connect works directly with clients at Rogue Retreat. All Care works with clients of Options for Southern Oregon. SOU works with their students who have housing insecurity. Rogue Valley Council of Governments works through its Home at Last, and that's a permanent supportive housing program to people with disabilities. Community works with homeless youth, and so there's just case management happening all over the place. One exciting recent effort is that for the first time ever, our continuum of care received money from HUD for a bonus project. And so now we're going to be able to help domestic violence and sexual assault survivors. It'll be a collaboration funded through the COC for Community Works and the Housing Authority of Jackson County. And St. Vincent's right here, that should say rental assistance program instead of renal assistance. St. Vincent's is all-encompassing, so perhaps they would also help with renal assistance. But they do help with rental assistance here. Our fourth strategy is to provide financial assistance. And some of that is done through CDBG, Community Development Block Grant Funding. Some of that goes to St. Vincent de Paul and OnTrack. United Way has the Hope Chest. Access has a ready-to-rent course. It's a very lengthy 12-week course. It runs three times a year, and individuals get a certificate of completion, which they can then show to landlords. And lots of times that opens the door to housing for them when they complete the program. Many of these people have a long eviction history, and so this class teaches them how to be a better tenant and life skills that are necessary to remain successfully housed. And Community Works and Hearts with a Mission provide classes for youth that are life skill based. Center for Nonprofit Legal Services offers classes to people on tenants' rights and responsibilities and fair housing. Various churches also offer classes on personal finance and life skills training. The ACRC and St. Vincent de Paul also provide short-term housing through emergency hotel vouchers. And Maslow provides financial assistance to families that are homeless and to unaccompanied youth, so youth who don't have an adult in the home. All right, strategy five is to develop some more shelter beds and transitional shelter. We're working really hard in the valley to open up an emergency shelter, and it looks as if we'll be able to open up a 50-bed emergency shelter in Medford. It'll be the first of many satellite campuses, we're hoping. It should open this fall.
That's in addition to Kelly Shelter.
No, it will take the place of Kelly Shelter, because Kelly Shelter only runs for 90 days, and this will be year-round. With case management and a day shelter component.
How many beds?
50. The building that's being purchased has room for expansion, but there are other tenants in those spaces, and so when those leases are up, then we can expand. Best practices say not to have more than 100 beds on any one site. National studies have shown that, so the most we would have that site would be 100 beds.
Excuse me. The Kelly Shelter is on track for doing year-round, I think.
Rogue Retreat is now actually moving into the building.
Yes.
That's being purchased by another community partner.
Yes.
And they will be running the year-round shelter.
Right.
But I didn't know that they were also going to still... That wasn't what I had heard recently.
I'm a board member.
Uh-huh.
Are moving the Kelly Shelter out of the church.
Yes.
To that location.
Yes. Right. Just trying to sort of stay on topic here.
It's a lot of information.
It's a lot. It's a lot. But just other types of housing that's been developed in the last 10 years, bridge housing and longer term service intensive housing, especially for veterans. One recent program is that Access is providing SHAP funds, which are statewide, housing?
Homeless assistance something.
Housing assistance program, which is our shelter house. Oh, it's
state
something.
Homeless assistance.
Oh, okay.
Program.
I had it on another slide.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's what it stands for.
Yeah.
And that has helped with Kelly Shelter and with Ashland Winter Shelter. It's also helped with Maslow. Maslow opened up a shelter this year for transition age youth, and it will have a 90-day limit annually, and it's on their campus. And the City of Medford is working with Youth 715 Ministries to develop a transitional housing program that will have vocational training on site. Our last strategy is really to raise community awareness, and it's been done in various ways. Homeless Task Force, way back in 2011, did the Portraits of Disconnection and photo exhibit to raise awareness. Access did a 24-episode series with Channel 5 called So Close to Homeless. And I want to talk about just monthly and annual events that happen all the time that help to raise awareness and also connect people to services. Every third Tuesday of the month, Access and Rogue Valley Veterans Community Outreach and other providers meet for an event. It's called Third Tuesday because it happens on Third Tuesday. The Homeless Task Force meets monthly to look at ways to raise awareness on issues of homelessness and to have panel discussions to educate themselves and to do networking. The Continuum of Care does the annual point-in-time count and our housing inventory count of what types of beds are available here, whether they're emergency beds, transitional housing, permanent supportive housing, low-income housing. We have our Project Community Connect, which is an annual event that just happened, and the VA holds an annual stand-down. I'm not supposed to yet share data on our point-in-time count, but it happened way back in January, and our point-in-time count is lower this year for 2019, and I really think it shows just the community-wide momentum that's building around the issue of homelessness, because this year we went out to the hinterlands. We were in Butte Falls and Shady Cove and Prospect, holding community fairs and providing free meals and getting our data that way. And so even with more volunteers than ever and a water geographical counting, our numbers are down. But more importantly, the number for chronic homelessness is down. Last year it went from 1 in 4 persons meeting the definition of chronically homeless to 1 in 3, and has a 32% increase, and so that's alarming. We're back down to 1 in 4, and I'd like to see that go much lower. To be chronically homeless means an individual has been homeless for 12 consecutive months and has a disabling condition, or has lived through 4 episodes of homelessness in the past 3 years and also has a disabling condition. And so it's a critical time in a person's life that they meet that definition. So just remember, these are the highlights of everything that's happened in the past 10 years. Lots of other work's been done. Any questions I can answer?
Well, I'll start.
Yes,
I guess,
please.
I was wondering, because I saw that the Medford had their new homeless plan for 19. And I know people were getting together to do that. Is that concretized in terms of numbers, or is it just bringing together, I guess, how does that relate to the goals that you all have?
It's an action plan and what the city of Medford's going to try to accomplish in the next 3 to 5 years to address homelessness. And a consulting firm put that together. The Medford City Council met in May for a look at the final draft of that, or next to final draft, and they're spending the summer in discussions and coming back in September or October to finalize and to decide whether or not to adopt or to revise and adopt. Mm-hmm. And so it actually follows a lot of the continual care priority list, and it talks about collaborations that the city can make. The city made it Medford-centric, but they're hoping that it will help other municipalities in the county to adopt plans that would be reasonable and achievable in their own municipality.
So they do have numbers in there. So if we saw it, we would see their goals. I mean, is it besides just this group will work with this group and that group, but do they have?
They do have goals. They got a lot of data from the continuum of care, and they looked at how many units of rapid rehousing are needed,
okay,
how many
right.
units of permanent supportive housing are needed right. in the county. And they're looking at ways to address that. Remember, that data is always tied to that date and time, you know. So when they asked for that data back in March, that was how many individuals needed it. You know, we currently have 1,600 households we're working with.
1,600. Wow. Other questions?
Yes.
I keep thinking that there would be a county regional solution or part of the solution to helping with not just homelessness, but I guess basically I'm focused on the winter shelter because living here, you know, in Oregon with the snow and the cold and then looking at that 99 corridor, you know, between mm-hmm. Ashland and Medford, and thinking that there should be a way that we could build, you know, more shelter. I know that's not the ultimate answer. The permanent supportive housing is the answer.
Right.
But we also need more shelters, I think. Is the county, where does the county fit in with all these? I just feel like the county's not there is how it feels sometimes.
The county has come to the table. The county's present in a lot of our work groups, and the county is actually funding part of the continuum of care's work, as is the city of Ashland. All the municipalities have engaged that way. The county has not offered up any county land for the development of a shelter. Is that what you're asking?
Yes. That would be one.
That would be one possibility, yeah. Right? The shelter that's under development in Medford is because one agency had funding availability to buy a building, and then they're going to be the owners of that building, and another agency will then come in and do oversight of the shelter. That's going to be Rogue Retreat.
Right.
And so we're trying to look at unique ways of doing collaboration, because the agency that purchased the building didn't want to run the shelter because that's really outside the purview of their mission.
Right.
And so I'm not sure where the county is on that. The county has asked me to give them an update, so I'm hoping that they will see an opportunity to engage in shelter beds or in any type of housing, because I'm locked into HUD rules and regulations, and so I can't even look at Hope Village as potential housing according to HUD, because it doesn't have heat, water, electricity in the units, and so it doesn't meet their definition of shelter.
Right.
But it does provide shelter. It provides an entry back into community life, and it helps people transition up to transitional housing or permanent housing or permanent supportive housing, whatever their acuity is, whatever their needs are. But there's just so many rules and regulations with housing, and I'm just not sure exactly where the county is. I'd love to see further engagement with the county. Yes, Dennis.
I think we've come full circle back to some of the discussion around the levy for the jail and how they're looking, because when you talk to them, they say, oh, yes, we do connect pre-jail and post-jail. And you go, really? And it's not the message that I hear a lot that they do.
They've been a great partner in that community justice resource center.
Okay, so.
So, you know, they're providing staff time for that. They're providing location for that. They're providing transportation. You know, so there are certain ways they have engaged.
What I'd be looking for, and what maybe you can comment on, is how we're helping people enter a process to be housed and then supporting them, et cetera. And it just seems like we get to a certain spot in all of that, and it just ends.
Our bottleneck has been availability of housing, because we really have worked to break down silos, and we have agencies offering their housing into our centralized housing list. And so it's much more trauma-informed. People get to tell their story one time, and they sign a release of information. We can refer out to partners. But then people remain on that list until a unit opens up.
What kind of capacity? I mean, what are we looking at?
The need?
To meet the need.
We're looking at 1,600 units.
And we're at what now? And where are we now? We're 1,600 more.
1,600 more. Which is daunting, right?
Yeah.
But for the 1,600 households, if I had 1,600 units, they could be housed right now.
And then we'd need some more.
I'm sorry.
And then we might need
some
more.
Oh, and then we'd need some more. But I was just looking at, you know, the first 1,600 that we need. Right. Did that help answer your question at all? And just for to be transparent, I'm on that jail committee,
right?
Because the sheriff asked me. I said I will be on that committee because I want to talk about what people experiencing homelessness need in the current jail, and if a new jail is to be built. So I'm there as an advocate for people who are entering in and they're already homeless, and so you know they're not going to get housed while they're in jail. And I would say the county has been a good partner because they've let me bring in resources to the jail now. We developed resource packets. The sheriff's deputies have been trained on homelessness services, and so those are some of the ways the county stepped up.
And I've suggested that they need to put that narrative out there, because I think that's one of the things that didn't happen is they were shopping support for it. So it's one of the things that has to be put out there, but it has to be expanded a little bit more. We need to find some opportunities to improve some of those services,
and
especially the downline services, so that we don't just take them to jail, give them a few days, and then we're right back to square one.
Right, because that creates more trauma. You know, it's not a succinct. I know that there are plans for medical assisted treatment in the jails, and that's something I'm really excited about, because that could help someone come out of jail healthier than when they went into jail.
So I'm raising my hand so I get a chance to
yes.
talk to that. So one of the things I think we all ought to look at is what's happening in the legislature. And I think there's a potential of a complete disaster, because waiting in the legislature are many, the understanding on a statewide level of the connection on mental health and crime and housing is, and health, are all moving in a very good way.
And substance use disorders.
What?
Substance use disorders comes in there too.
Right, right.
All of that,
and so there's many bills up there that would provide money and ongoing direction, because it's a real new direction for the state. But I think it doesn't have to be just our local city and county trying to put together the pieces for this. And so at a later point, I just got the list of the ones that are out there waiting, so it builds. But I just wanted to, as we think about this thing, we also need to think about what are the resources coming in from the state.
Or they can get locked in time.
And we also have to look at the
body. Locked up in time. Or, I mean, are we going to run out before they get approved?
Most of these are dead unless something happens. But that's another question. I don't want to go into that.
And that hasn't come in.
So I continually have heard reports of people experiencing homelessness getting released from the jail at like midnight, where they have to walk all the way back to Ashland because the bus service has stopped. Is that continuing?
No.
That has stopped.
Yeah. That has stopped. Sheriff Sickler was very agreeable to not release anyone after, I don't know if it's 9 or 10 at night, and they're not released until 7 the next morning, which was fantastic in the winter months, and that's continuing now.
So what about the hospitals and releasing? Because
the hospitals are not as agreeable.
But
yes.
Because in Portland, there was an article today about releasing people from the hospitals up there into nothingness.
Right, and they're medically fragile, and they're being released.
I think one of the takeaways for me from this past winter shelter season is that we saw more chronically mentally ill walking people that I still see in the community walking around, and I don't understand how they will ever get housing unless I mean, if I were a renter, I wouldn't want to rent to someone like that. So I just think there need to be some special facilities that have live-in caseworkers. And really, we're seeing, as we screen our applicants before we bring them into winter shelter, this year was the first year we've done that,
yes.
We saw more of those folks. And it's disturbing to know.
We do have Columbia Care coming in down there with 25 units eventually.
By the bank.
Yeah.
By the credit union.
They just got slowed up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that is going to happen?
And Jackson County Mental Health a few years ago did develop housing for people with severe and persistent mental illness. And so that is intensive case management.
And would Ashland Homeless be eligible for something like that?
I think they should be developed by Jackson County. I mean, I don't know what their admission criteria is, but those units are few and far between. What we really need is permanent supportive housing here. And agencies have stepped up and said that they would allow their staff to do the case management in units that are built by someone else, because their staff would conceivably have that client anyway, why not just provide the case management on site?
Before Jackson County lost their mental health contract to Options, there was a plan to do a facility in Ashland. I've tried to talk to Mark and other people about how do you follow through on that. Options says they do stuff here, but I think it's a very minor part of their operation. But I think it's ultimately the county's responsibility to address the mental health needs of homeless people throughout the county.
What is the county-wide issue?
That's what we're having, I think, what I hear. And I'm not hearing that the county's being responsive.
Right.
And the CCOs, I don't know where they stand in terms of providing those kind of services.
They use other providers in Jackson County.
Yeah.
One of the problems, you know, ORAs, so ACRC, when you see that up on the on the slide, that's ORA.
Right.
And then the Ashland Winter Shelter, ORA is
the big
organization, the umbrella organization, and then all these 300 people and partners helping out. One of the problems we have with Options, for instance, at ACRC, is they can give us a counselor, and you can bring in someone that needs mental health counseling, but you can't force that person to come back and meet with them again.
And so what happens is then the options mental health person can't bill because there is no regularity. There's nobody that can follow that person and keep bringing them in for that regular appointment.
Oh,
I agree.
An outpatient therapy model is not going to work.
Which is why permanent supportive housing makes so much sense, because then you have the people living there in their units, and then you also have one-stop shop, so you have the counselors as a part of that. But I got to tell you, it's so frustrating. So now we're looking at bringing in mental health student, graduate students, and having them supervised by, you know, different people, trying to look at that model that maybe we can provide more without having to do all that billing.
What you need is an active outreach of case managers, not necessarily trained mental health professionals. You can have a consultant or an MSW or a psychologist, but you need some bachelor's level case managers, QMHA, under Medicaid.
I agree.
And deploy them in the community and have them make contact with various homeless. People are floating around with all their possessions in the shopping cart.
Yep.
It's not hard to find them. But they're not going to find you.
Right. And just then how do you fund the case managers to do
so
it?
So before we dig deep into mental health,
I agree with you, Tom.
Let's see if there's anything more for Connie that we need, because we need to move on to this. Okay, go ahead.
Well, I would just want to, A, thank Connie, not that I'm saying this is a wrap-up, but thank Connie for coming, and I think one of the biggest strategies from the continuum of care, tenure plan, and homelessness is the institutionalization of the continuum of care and providing an actual staff person, which the continuum of care has never had before until Connie, who can be that person who can go to these places and negotiate these things and be that advocate and the presence of this idea, because the continuum of care is an idea that we'll all collaborate together, but there was never anyone who was bringing all those pieces. And so to me, your role has been the biggest collaboration from the strategies and has really borne a lot of fruit, I feel like. I mean, I think the jail piece was huge because the Jackson County Homeless Task Force had been wanting to do that for years, to not have people released into the middle of the night, because what good does that do? And until we had this institutionalized board in Connie, that wasn't able to happen. And part of that, I think it speaks to the, I'm not going to say that the county is unresponsive, I'm going to say that the county lives in its own silo and does not play well with others because they don't have to. And so it was finally like, oh, well, we can play well with others if you ask us in the right way, consistently and for many months. And so really, I mean, this process has been pulling these little pieces out, like the jail piece, and then saying, okay, well, now that we're releasing them at 7 in the morning, now what? Right. And then having those other pieces, like we have a representative from Jackson County Mental Health now, which we never really had before. Nobody from Jackson County Mental Health came to the Homeless Task Force, or if we did have them, they would be able to come to one meeting and then not come for months. And so they didn't hear, like, all the ways that having people with mental illness on the streets are impacting all the other agencies and how everybody functions. So to me, your piece has been probably the most important piece, and I'm really thankful for that.
Thank you. It is like everyone working really diligently this year. And when I was hired, they showed me who had been invited to sit on the board, and I laughed out loud, which you should never do in your first day of work. And I said, well, these individuals don't talk to each other. Mm-hmm. These individuals have never been in the same room together. These individuals don't like each other. I've been a resident of Ashland for quite a while, and the nice thing is people put aside their personal agendas, and they have built bridges in the past 18 months. Mm-hmm. And they have just common goals, and they're seeing new ways of being and operating. So I think everyone is just using their higher selves to really try to find workable solutions. So I'm grateful for that. And the board members have been very congenial to one another, and a lot has gotten done. So I was wrong. All right. You know? So we all can learn.
All Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
We'll move on to the next thing.
Thank you, Connie.
I think one of the things that it highlights for us is that a lot of that success is because cities and other entities are really taking the steps to step up. And so I think we're going to look, at least in terms of our CDBG plan, how we can be part of that. So that's our next step, I think, if Linda gets back. So, well,
we're sort
of, what? We are into that. So you can look on the piece in there, the yellow sheet on the inside, and we can, I hope everybody's had a chance to read it. And so we have a task in front of us in terms of revising this thing.
Yeah.
And so that will...
Rich, I'll be interested. You get it. Maybe you and I can grab coffee.
Okay,
this
sure.
And the other thing that I'd like to get some thoughts on is the liaison report back to council. So give some thought to what you'd like
what
to have.
What we'd like to send in,
what
right.
What you'd like to have
right.
mentioned that you're working on and that yeah. type of thing. So
okay.
Thank you.
Right. Thanks, Dennis.
I'd rather stay, really.
No, that's go do it.
Go out to your place.
Oh, have fun.
Yeah,
I was supposed to be there, too.
I'll let them know where you are.
I have to be here. Yeah. Have fun. So, you know what? I had a little note right here.
Okay.
And I didn't know the current plan was from 2015 to 2019. And I wondered if we could look at the current. So, I mean... rather than to reinvent the wheel. I know we are going to do some changes.
Didn't you look at it?
You mean the consolidated plan?
Right.
We can.
I'll take the puppy. I thought that might be good.
So I don't have a copy of that document with me today, but we can talk briefly about it, and certainly we can look at it at the next meeting. And the reason that I'm bringing this up now and just laying it out is because we have to engage in the process of developing a new plan, and I think looking at the old plan is important, mostly because things don't actually change that much. And some of you have been here for development of previous plans, but part that you guys are involved in is the community outreach piece. And there's two pieces to it. We want to engage the community, which Rich had brought up at the last meeting, around our grant funds and getting more people to apply. And then the other piece is hearing from the agencies who do apply about what they see as priority. So there's it, and HUD calls it consultation. We need to consult with the other agencies about essentially the community needs. So I'm just going to briefly go over essentially what the consolidated plan is and what we'll be doing with it. So,
before you start, I'm going to have to leave in 10 minutes so don't be offended if I walk out in the middle of here.
I'll try not to be. Although it's pretty boring, as a lot of CDBG stuff is. And we've talked a little bit about the CDBG cycle before, but I know some of you are new, and so I just thought that this would be a helpful introduction to this process and then what we'll be doing with it. So essentially, the City of Ashland, as we know, receives about $175,000 a year in CDBG funds, sometimes more, sometimes less. And it has to be for projects benefiting low and moderate income residents. But as a condition of receiving these funds, we have to maintain a plan for how we're going to use them. And the plan needs to be pretty inclusive, and it has to identify spending priorities. And that determines what we fund. Although in reality, what we know is that we make things very broad so that we can fund the range of activities that come forward because we're not able to control the applications that we get in any given year. Other cities who have more money probably have more opportunities, but we have some limited capacity in our region with the different providers that we have. So we're required to update this plan every 5 years, and I call it our five-year grant application. So it's essentially our application to HUD saying, here are our needs, here's what we would do with the money, you should keep giving us this money. All of the projects funded except for program administration have to meet one of these national objectives. And so I'll just go over them briefly. Benefit to low and moderate income persons, and that requires that we, the city, spend 70% of our funds to meet that. We actually spend 100% of our funds. It's just easier, although we do have that option. And then there's also a couple of other categories, which I will tell you we have never done. Well, that's not true. We might have done one. So aid in the prevention or elimination of slums or blight. We don't actually have any areas in our city that meet the HUD's definition of slum or blight. And although we could do a spot basis one, but we don't even have that at this point. Or meeting a particular urgent need. And I would say, before we actually got CDBG funds, we rebuilt this bridge. What did we get it with? I think it was in 97, so we already had money. But anyway, we rebuilt this bridge with CDBG funding because during the flood it broke and we had to replace it. So that's an example of urgent need. I don't know if we used some special money or if it was our regular allocation because it wasn't here then, but that is one way. If there was some emergent need that came up because of a disaster, we could use CDBG money to meet that need, provided that it met all the other regulations. But then we don't have to say it only benefits low-income people. It can benefit the whole community. But primarily, the activities we do benefit low- and moderate-income people 100%. So what is the consolidated plan? It's a five-year strategic plan to provide an outline of action for the community as it works toward meeting the housing and community development needs of its low and moderate income households. The plan's development includes a profile of the community, its economy, an assessment of housing and community development needs, and the development of long-range strategies to meet those needs. So that's what we have to do in the next year. And I've said this is a little redundant, but we are required to provide this plan to HUD in order to continue to get our funding. It's a planning document for the jurisdiction, which builds on a participatory process among citizens, organizations, businesses, and other stakeholders. It is a submission for federal funds under HUD's formula grant programs for jurisdictions. It's a strategy to be followed in carrying out the HUD programs and a management tool for assessing performance and tracking results. And so we'll get to that piece a little bit later. Essentially, as I think Rich brought up to Connie, we do have numerical values that we put into this document that says we will do this for this many households and we will do this for this many households. And we get to those numbers based on what we've done in the past and based on what we see as our needs. We're not going to put in things that we're not going to be able to accomplish. I mean, we're not going to get held. Our feet aren't going to be super held to the fire if we don't make our goals all the time. But we want to be, I would say we want to be conservative in what we say. Like, we're not going to help 5 million people just because that's just not, you know, realistic. But it is something that we use as an assessment tool and HUD uses as an assessment tool for us. Are you spending your grant funds the way you said you are? Are you meeting those outcomes? And it's the same thing that we do to the CDBG grantees, right? You say you're going to help 25 people. If it's mid-year and you've helped two, I'm kind of wondering what's going on, and I'm going to check in with you to make sure that everything's going right and we're on track. HUD would do the same thing essentially to me, like, you have, which they do with the timeliness thing. You have an awful lot of money sitting in your account right now. What's going on with that? And as you know, it isn't always our fault, but, you know, what can you do? So, there is tracking involved, there is assessment, there are strategies, and one thing that we've brought up in the past when we're scoring CDBG applications is that we need to have a broad document because we can't fund things that we didn't identify. So we don't want to, you know, turn down one project for housing and end up funding something that we said we weren't going to do at all or isn't identified. So that's why we want to have a good range of activities. The purpose of the plan is to outline a strategy for the city to follow in using CDBG funding to achieve the goals of the CDBG program and HUD identifies a goal for us, which is to develop viable urban communities by providing decent housing and a suitable living environment and expanding economic opportunities, principally for low and moderate income persons. So within the wheelhouse of all the things CDBG can do, there's economic development, there's some suitable living environment stuff, which really speaks to, you know, historic preservation, sidewalks, ADA accessibility, some of those things that we don't really do all that often here, but which can be done because it's all-encompassing under this lovely goal of the CDBG program. Oops. Okay. So our last consolidated plan, the one that we are currently working under, right, because it won't expire till the end of this fiscal year, which for us is June 30th. So these were the sort of large overarching goals that we, or primary objectives that we identified in the last cycle. Affordable and workforce housing, the creation, preservation, and maintenance of housing, which is affordable to extremely low, low, and moderate income individuals and families. So that's a pretty broad umbrella. We can rehab houses. We can buy land to build new houses. We can do maintenance on houses. We can, like, we painted Star Thistle a couple of years ago, and we gave money to Ashland Supportive Housing to maintain their housing unit and do ADA upgrades for their population as they age. And then, you know, we give money to the Housing Authority. That's actually public facilities improvements. We didn't buy land. Oh, we did buy land for access for Hyde Park. So those are just sort of the ways that we have worked to reach that affordable and workforce housing goal.
Mm-hmm. So just something that's bugging me a little bit. I'm just looking at the bottom of the yellow memo, and it says the current plan 2015 to 2019 was drafted in 2014 and expires on June 30th, 2020.
Right. So next
2020.
Year. Yes.
1 year from now.
Because 2019 is that we're in fiscal year or program year 2019. So we have made the 2019 awards, and all of those activities are going to go until June 30th. They actually have longer in the contract.
Okay.
And then they'll end.
Okay.
And then we'll fund new activities.
Okay. Thank you.
It is weird. No, it's weird.
Maybe you're going to get to this, but what is our timeline for adopting?
I am going to get to this. Okay. That's at the end. Okay. And then homeless, at-risk, and special needs populations. The creation of or support for new and existing emergency and support services to homeless, at-risk, and special needs populations that foster self-sufficiency and economic independence. It's a mouthful. And then lastly, economic and community development, the creation and support for an environment that fosters economic opportunity for extremely low, low, and moderate income residents. And those extremely low means that 30% of area median income. Low income is defined as like 50, 60. It's really 50 for HUD, but 60 for a lot of other things. And then moderate income is 80% of area median income. And so that's the cutoff for all CDBG funding to meet that low income requirement is below 80. So we can do economic development, but we haven't. We've had people ask about it, but we just haven't done it yet. So it's not that we can't do it, and it's one of the primary objectives. We have done a lot of homeless and special needs populations. We did the Living Opportunities remodel at their facility. We did the Clark Street Rehab for the respite home for Ash. We did, obviously, we support St. Vincent de Paul, and we support Maslow Project. So those are all things that fall under that homeless, at-risk, special needs population. Okay. So then identify priorities. The spending priorities are very similar to those included in previous plans. So the last slide, these have not changed. These primary objectives have not changed over the years. We can decide in this one if they should be expanded or changed. I mean, they really encompass a lot of the activities that we expect to be doing with this funding. Similarly, the spending priorities have not changed over the years, primarily because the provision of affordable housing is our biggest priority. And so, like, what I always tell applicants when they come, and I think what I probably tell you when you score them, the applications, I mean, there's a couple of pieces that come into play, but one of them is our highest priority is affordable housing. If someone comes in and they want all the money to build an affordable housing project, and it's a really viable application. It's going to move forward, clearly. It's all, you know, it's got the timeliness, they're in the process, they, you know, have site control, all those pieces, like the Columbia Care Project. And then someone comes in and they want to do an emergency shelter. Well, that's not a good example. And they want to do economic development or historic preservation. We would probably fund the housing because that's our highest priority. Not only that, but we haven't met our housing goals, so we'd want to try to meet that if we can. The most important goal, or the highest identified priority, is affordable housing preservation development, and then homeless and emergency services. I can't see this on my screen, so I'm hoping you can see this.
You were right.
So this is, you know, essentially what's in our document. We have some really specific goals, we have an outcome indicator, and then we have a numeric goal for the whole five-year period. And these are based on goals that we have been able to achieve. We have been able to get 50 units in a five-year period. We did it in our last cycle. I think we'll do it in our next cycle because, we didn't fund Columbia Care with this money. We tried to, but that didn't work. But we will have the Housing Authority, and they probably will ask us for some money, so we'll probably meet that goal in the next go-round, which will be great because it doesn't look like we're meeting it now. But we have a couple of things. Number of rental units constructed. Number of ownership units deed restricted, which essentially means, you know, making sure that they're affordable over a time period. Number of housing units receiving repairs or ADA improvements that increase the supply of housing suitable for all ages and abilities. We're really doing well on that one. Because that's an easy thing to fund. It's a pretty discrete activity. And, you know, we had, in this five-year time period, we had Habitat for Humanity do their home repair program, and now we have the fire department doing their ADA housing safety program. So we're really being able to meet this target. Over the years, this has been a target we've been able to meet, but that isn't always the case, right? And then rental security deposit. So this is a separate goal. Support housing and services for homeless outreach, prevention, and transition. We have rental security deposit assistance. We identified 100 households. We're doing great on that because we have St. Vincent de Paul, you know, that we've been funding, and they help a lot of households. Outreach direct services to homeless populations. We have Maslow. And so we're, you know, they are getting targets every year. Support housing and services for people with special needs. We're not doing so great on those, even though we have done some. And then these ones we really haven't done. We do these some years, but we haven't done any. Like, in years past, we have put in ramps in neighborhoods where there are not ramps. And it is specifically neighborhoods which are in a low-income census block group, which we have, I think we have three here. And then, of course, there's sidewalks as well, sidewalk improvements. And that speaks to that decent living, suitable living environments. And then in years past, we've also done some transportation things, and then of course economic development. We keep a placeholder, but that's not something we've had the opportunity to do in the past. And so these are all the goals that we've set in that last five-year time period, and that is where we're at this, you know, we haven't reported the outcomes from this year's activities because they haven't happened yet. So essentially, that's what we are going to need to do for this next go-round. Okay, and if I can get the next slide, there. Here's our timeline. We need to start in August. I think we need to start in August, though we could start sooner. But we need to form, essentially, an outreach plan. In the past, we've done a few different things. We had an event. We did a direct mailing to low-income households, and we served food. Not many people came. We didn't serve a lot of food, and it was kind of a cold night. Do you remember that, Heidi? Down at the Grove. We had the Grove.
Yeah.
So anyway, it was in the winter. In another previous iteration, we had Pioneer Hall, and we did a cafe-style roundtable discussion with agencies. So
what we'll have to do is decide how we want to get feedback from the public, which is usually a little informative piece about what CDBG is, what it does, what do you think we should do with it. We can do a lot of things. We've done key informant interviews in the past directly with housing providers, or, you know, we identify people within the community. We've also done a survey online and done a mailer, and I can provide you with all those materials. We can review everything that we've done in the past. So this is sort of my idea of, we'll need to figure out what we want to do and then what materials we want to develop for that, and then put it into action with essentially housing developers, agencies, the public. In November last year, we had that Red Burden Forum, and we're required to hold one every year. We don't have to do it in November. We can do it whenever. We just have to do it before December. And so it can fall anywhere in there. It seems like it would be a good time to get some public feedback.
So that we did the rent burden because we had money for it.
No, because the state said we had to do it.
Oh, you had to. So they didn't give us any money.
No. No. No, they said we had to do it as part of that rent burden cities thing. So,
but we don't have to do it again.
No, we do. We have to do it every single
so
year.
So every year they're going to have rent burden. Okay.
Well, every year they want us to hold a public discussion about rent burden.
Okay.
And so I feel like if we're doing that already, it would be a really good time to talk about one of the tools we have to help alleviate rent burden and how the public can have some input. So that's something that we can explore. And then I'll need some time to draft it and bring it back to you guys. Last year, I worked with Echo Northwest, and they drafted some of it. So we got to have a couple of, we got to hire a consultant. I never get to hire a consultant. and then you guys need to review it before we start the whole public hearing process, because it's this is public money, it's a public document. It has to go through that full hearing process where people have a lot of opportunity to come in and say, I like what you're doing, or I don't like what you're doing. And HUD really wants to see that you've done that and that you've advertised it and that you let people know. So I worked backwards from the time. We're going to go to the council in April to make CDBG awards, and it's the best time to also bring this document forward and have them adopted. So I'm feeling like I would like mid-April for all of it to be done. And then I have to submit it to HUD because it has to be there 45 days before the end of our program year.
Okay, let's get discussion.
I have a question. So all of this that you've put together so nicely, can we get that timeline? Can we get that via email on the same page with that?
I'll email this one and Connie's presentation out to you.
Okay, that would be wonderful.
Have access to it.
And then also, I had mentioned maybe getting what it looked like last time, but this is so well put together, I don't know, we might need
Well, and
that.
It's really the highlights.
Yeah,
I mean,
this is the level I needed.
Well, and I'd be happy to, I mean, I can email it to you. It is on the city's website, mm-hmm. And it has a lot of other stuff in it. It's, you know, this is the highlights of what we use the most in making our decisions.
Yeah, I think the highlight's good. I don't get bogged down in
that one. Well, and what it primarily has is a lot of sort of data information about all the things that HUD thinks is important, mm-hmm. is what I should say, like lead-based paint poisonings and, you know, people and homelessness. So I use the point-in-time count data, mm-hmm. to inform the housing inventory chart. I use that to inform this document.
I think that's the consolidated version is good. It has all the points we need to run with it.
Well, and in a lot of ways, like, I'll do all that research, and you'll get to see it again, and it'll all be new data, and that will be interesting. But our job is, how do we get to, what are our new goals, what are our new priorities, how many people, households, whatever, are we going to target, and how do we get the feedback from the public around those things?
I think it would be good to
do the rent burden meeting earlier than November, because then it's like we're getting their feedback when we're towards the end of what we're doing, and then maybe try and put a little bit more into advertising it to the public. And I think that would be a good thing, because I'm even thinking just for me personally, like getting like my personal friends who are all around my age, and we talk about rent burden and Ashland because it's so expensive, into that, because I don't think that it's on their radar, things like that. So,
well,
that's a great suggestion.
I know that you had something, but can I briefly throw in? We do have another thing with the next item of discussion, that SB 608, and I don't know. I mean, it's kind of backing up on us all these events to plan, and I don't know how much we can combine. So maybe that's something we can hold over for the next part of the discussion, or the SB 608.
Well, I would just sort of set these two discussions just go together.
Mm-hmm.
And what we need to think through is, I mean, you've got kind of an outline there, but we need to think through what is our kind of integrated outreach program rather than kind of separate entities.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was your suggestion.
Yeah, what, is it possible to do those two together or no?
That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, or would it be too long to do it together?
Well, I don't think it, no, because I think it's just how we structure it. But we can talk about that.
Let me just throw in another thing for planning purposes. St. Vincent de Paul called me, and they are really wanting to bring the agencies together to discuss their common goals now. And so they felt that when we had done that in the past, it was really a benefit. And I agree, and I think we haven't done that. And there's a new landscape out there that would be... There ought to be some kind of way that we can pull all of this together into one kind of program that isn't just CDBG and then these other pieces that are out there, including 608. So, wow.
I was just thinking, some of our outreach efforts have been somewhat anemic in the past, and if we could find a more dynamic way of, like, engaging, maybe if we did it at SOU and some of the students in government would participate, that would draw students in terms of rent burden. You know, maybe identifying different populations and somehow structuring it in a location that we would draw people that we haven't engaged before, like Head Start parents or, you know, people who are low income.
Okay, sure.
Actually, before you were going to say that, I was just simply wondering if there'd be opportunities as part of this to just do some simple kind of door-to-door canvassing, ask people about their, you know, rental situation, rent burdening, and maybe there could be some local events that we could just pick as well to do some kind of clipboarding, just do some simple questions for people.
Do we have any funds to do something like Facebook advertising, which... Like, when we posted things on Ashland Peeps last year, like, when I don't post very much on Ashland Peeps, but it got buried, and I think it got almost no views. And so I think one of the challenges is that we are putting things on social media, but they're not necessarily being seen, whereas things like when you pay for advertising, then you do get a certain amount.
I will have probably a small budget for this, and like, I hired a consultant last year. We paid for the survey, monkey survey stuff, and some maintenance and postcards. So there will be some budget.
I don't know that you can...
You know what? I wanted to jump on kind of what Aaron said, because I was thinking the same thing. It was lost in Ashland Peeps. But, you know, I don't know if any... say if we had a Facebook and we liked it, and so my followers would see that too. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we need more of a push and in your face. And Ashland Peeps was a great idea, but it's so inundated with stuff. It's out there once it's gone.
Yeah.
Sarah's got an idea, don't I?
I'm not sure if I remember it. I mean, I think I remember that event, but was it an actual event or was it posted on the Peeps as just like a flyer as a post? Do you know?
Was it the survey?
No, we put the survey on there, but we also put, I think both of us, didn't you and I both, Jackie, did put, and on Nextdoor.
Well,
no, the survey went on Nextdoor. No, it did go on Ashton Peaks as a post.
Yeah, so that, I mean, that would be, I've seen a lot of groups make that mistake as far as with Facebook and just making a post or a flyer and it looks pretty, but making the actual event, because then I have like a dozen pages. I manage their local pages for, you know, most of, like this would tie in with most of those. And so then once it's an event, there's an option you add it to your page. So it doesn't mean that that page I'm adding it to is hosting it or anything, but if somebody goes to that page and clicks on events, they're going to see it. Just like on the event page.
I don't think we had an event. Did we have an event for?
I don't remember. So, well, no, that's not true. So I think the survey thing that we had, the questionnaire, was for the social service grant priorities. Mm-hmm. And the event that we had was where we invited agencies to come.
I remember the survey. I remember putting the survey up. I don't remember.
Yeah. Oh, you don't? No, we. It's the one that we did at Ashland Hills.
We did have the Ashland Hills one. And we did advertise.
I heard about it because I showed up, I think, at that event.
But you, so you must have heard. And so the city does have a Facebook page. Mm-hmm. And I can post things to it.
Yeah. But doing it as an actual event and not just a post, I think, is key to sharing it.
So you know what happens for us, and I don't know what it looks like on the other end because I never see it, but we have a back-end webpage thing, and then I put in all the stuff.
That's for the webpage.
And then you click Twitter, Facebook.
I think it just shares it as a post then.
So, okay.
It doesn't
create it. And so that must be what happens, because then I just go click, 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 and then submit.
Yeah.
See, I think the one that took place at Ashland Hills, the advertisement there, something that I've noticed with advertising things such as SoPride, the old-fashioned way, depends on where you go. But if you go to the places and you have a flyer, and you put the flyer in all the right places, and you advertise it as an event, like you brought up, via social media, I thought what happened at the hotel was well received.
It was.
And that was the least anemic event.
Yeah.
And we had feedback. And I could see if we could get it at the property again.
Yeah.
But that was later. I mean, like, it depends on what day, what year, what month it is, shall I say.
Right.
But yeah, we could do it there again at the Hills and post it as an event. And the good old flyers. So many people go to the co-op.
I have a flyer location posting list for Ashland,
too,
that I would happily
share.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
That's, because so many people, oh, how did you hear about it? I saw your flyer.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Can I just try to gather this all together? Because we also have the 608 discussion, but I'd like to just kind of wrap that into one discussion. And one of the things that I just missed, but I know we have Lynn taking notes, or you're taking notes or something, but oftentimes you put it up on you brainstorm and you put up the things that we've said. And so we've said some things, but they're not up there necessarily right at the moment. What I was wondering is whether we can gather these things together, recognize that we're going to have them on our agendas for the next few months, but also gather that committee that was 608 or any other folks to take that little brainstorm list and come back to the next meeting with some options. Does that...
Would you like me, because each person that has said something, I've written down what they've said. You want that in the minutes and also on a separate save thing so people can continue to look at it?
You know, usually if you were doing it, you wouldn't have the whole thing. You'd just say a little. There'd be just these little things like that.
They're so little brief.
Do you want it in an email?
Well, the difficulty with sending it in the minutes is that we don't see it until
every
time. The next meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So
I can definitely do it away from the minutes as well.
But I was just wondering whether that or a new subcommittee could gather that together and start to fill it out so that we would have, so if we wait to the next meeting, we're starting from where we are now, because we got a half an hour. I think we could still brainstorm for some time if you want to put ideas into that mix. But my question was, what is that mix going to do before the next meeting?
I think it sounds like these things could all come together, but it's going to take some thought, I think, and some ideas. So I do like the idea of doing it in a subcommittee, but I know that's hard for people, especially in summer. And so it's really up to you guys how you feel about that.
This
is my job, actually.
I'm here. Summer is kind of a downtime for me.
But we had. What about the 608 folks? Do you guys want to continue into anything?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense to me, and I have no issue with kind of merging us together as one of the people who volunteered for that. So.
Yeah, same here.
Okay.
I think it'll make it more interesting to people too, and you might get more people coming because of that.
Correct, exactly. I think what I'm hearing is that we really want to expand the outreach in a good way because we've got some real opportunities, and so that's going to take a little bit of, you know, you could even do that in one meeting before our next meeting.
So when we talk about consolidating, are we talking about having this meeting and the 608 meeting as one meeting?
Planning, of course. We're not doing that.
I couldn't see how they actually like fit together.
No, they don't, but that's just the planning.
But the planning part is kind of the same.
I can send out to whoever wants to be in the subcommittee, or we're going to call it a work group. No, it's not a subcommittee. I can send out the materials that we've had from the events in the past for this and for the rent burden meeting, which was pretty ambiguous because it was just the state saying you have to do this before December. And I think, you know, the legislation passed in like late September. Mm-hmm. So it was like, oh, well, we have to do it at our next meeting. We have no choice. And so it was very on the fly. But I think we had a flyer. I think that's all we had.
And then I posted it
on the website and then did the, you know, click the buttons. And then we also, for a lot of things, we have access to the City Source utility bill mailer that I don't know that anyone really reads. Though I can put things
some
in it. Some people do.
You can get the paper copy.
Senior Center is a good place.
Well, and I wondered if they get in the email. And then the other thing about that is I have to give them that information.
I think it shows up in
almost
the email,
whole,
I feel like.
Over a month in advance.
Yeah.
So are we still talking about doing the 608 meeting in August?
Well, so, yeah, I mean, I think the reason we wanted to do the 608 meeting was so that we could get Jeff Golden there, since he was one of the bill's sponsors. But it depends on what the target of the meeting is. So one thing I wanted to bring up about 608, I had a discussion with my boss, who is Bill Molnar, the community development director. And one of the things that he said that he has noticed is that since it has passed, it's been a lot of questions for people at the counter and planners about, you know, I want to buy this house and this ARU, and I want to rent out the ARU, but I don't want to be stuck in these things. Can you tell me about what the rules would be? They've had people who have come in and talked about converting rentals and what would happen, or they're going to convert their rental now because they don't want to be stuck. He said it's interesting that, you know, the state passed this regulation, but they didn't do training to planners, and that's who are getting a lot of questions from the general public. And he thought it would be nice if we could also invite planners to this.
Can I just say that one of the things that I found, it was a video that the state legal services had put out about 608, and it's short, but it is
the clearest explanation
of the law that you'd ever see. And when I saw that, I thought, well, we can do outreach about this and get that out there, but it is not immensely complicated. You can get the outlines of this in a very clear way. And so, anyway,
can
I just
send the link.
I can send it.
I think the thing that's really critical is that we get a date nailed down if we want to have Marsh and Jeff Golden there.
Yeah.
We better get it on their calendars than our calendars, like right now.
Okay.
So that's my concern, is that August is flying out the door in my world.
Yes, it is.
I know. Right.
So can we do this? The people that are interested in that that planning that we're just talking about, after the meeting, we'll do the impossible task to see if we can find a time to get started on it. Just one meeting, but if we can find that and get the most people there, we can kind of get started on it.
I'm a little unclear. The topic is Renford and Senate Bill 608.
That's one of the topics, but we're integrating it in with this rather than we plan this and then we're planning a another event in a separate thing.
And
we're
when
putting
you say this, you
the
mean
CDBG.
CDBG has this
outreach.
Whole outreach that we have to do. We want to do, and
on
we
Renford.
Also want to
the
do
Renford.
Outreach on this, and so just have
now,
them.
Renford isn't the whole
No, but I think. Right.
No,
but I think it could fit in. So the Brent Burden meeting doesn't have to just be Brent Burden. It's a meeting where we have to allow people to talk about issues of Brent Burden.
We're still going to have separate meetings, right? But we're
well, I don't know. I mean, that's the question.
When we possibly might have separate
we
meetings.
We possibly might, or we if there's a way to integrate. If we
either way, we might be having them in the same place as part of kind of the same like series of meetings.
So that's why we have a planning committee, because I don't think we're settling that. Right now, you'd have a group that would look at the calendar, these events, what are the opportunities, so that we're scheduled. We know, if we had one group planning and another group planning, then we'd end up with uncoordinated.
I will say, though, that if we're looking at a date, like, I agree that on the calendar, if the planning committee comes back with a date at our next meeting, that's going to be right before August. And there's
so
we almost would have to pick a date. Now.
Well, and I don't know how, like I said, going back to who do we really want to target with this, do we really need Jeff or Pam there? Can they come down at some point? You know, I mean, it's...
And do it in September or October?
And that's the question I could ask them. I think what we just hadn't settled on is, what is the outcome of this meeting? What do we want it to be? I mean, obviously it's going to be educational, because that's sort of our role.
So I just think August is such an uphill battle for, you know, so many people are gone, and we don't even know what the smoke situation might be at that point. So if we could move it to September or October, that would be, I think, really helpful.
Right, but I think that's why you have these two groups meeting together, so that we're, whatever we put together has a coordinated calendar on it.
I do think it's important to have Jeff Golden there and Pam Marsh, because that's a draw, and it's also like an opportunity for them to hear the support and the questions about what we're doing.
Joe?
I do agree. But I also think that we should try and really just make it a big focus, and one of the main points is trying to get as many people there as possible.
Say again.
As many
people there as possible.
People, yes, right.
I think it's all, I mean, it's very, very nice to educate people about it and let people know what their new legal rights are and everything, but I think as well, an even harder part is the next steps, and if we could put together some sort of very well-connected brainstorming situation or whatever with the people who are actually attending it, as far as what's still needed in the housing market, that could be... not only very useful, but I think it can also be very positive for everybody there.
Right. Well, you're on the committee, so...
Yeah.
Well, I think there's also there's some potential for conflict. If we're going to try to draw in landlords and tenants, that's not always a pretty picture.
Right.
So we need to do that in a way that is, like, helpful to everybody.
Right. Yeah.
Well, and, you know, how I brought up before that the city of Medford also wants to do something and that there's some opportunity for partnership... It might be that we break it into two sessions. We do the tenant one, and they do the landlord one. But they're essentially like the same thing.
That's good. Well, you're on the committee too. So,
I was thinking the same thing, and that if we tried to do too much, then maybe it would not leave enough time to do either piece well. So, yeah, I think that's a good discussion point.
Can we agree to the folks that want to be on that, we're going to set the meeting after we adjourn, and then we're going to go to the social service grant application changes suggestions for 15 minutes, and then we'll be done.
So I don't, there was, I think, a subcommittee that was going to review the application. It was a subcommittee of Aaron.
So, subcommittee of Aaron.
You got ordained and subbed at the same time.
Exactly. So, Heidi and Tom and I had been in a subcommittee meeting where we were focusing on the grant application process prior, and then last meeting we talked about us getting together to talk about the any changes to the grant application. So Tom and I met. We did. Did you get my email for Tuesday? We met at.
I replied and nobody ever got back to me. I said what my days I'm available are, and nobody ever. So I thought we didn't meet.
You didn't get those emails? Interesting. Yeah, I thought we were replying all. We met at Pony Espresso at 10. That's interesting. I wonder what happened there. So we met on Tuesday. It was Tom and I. And so we went over a couple of different things. We had some questions.
Okay.
So the main question that we have is, how many changes can we make? Because we were not sure what kind of changes we would be allowed to make since it was a shared application, and if we wanted to go into a direction of only having an Ashland application, or if there are some changes that we could make that maybe United Way and City of Medford would like, where we would just change the shared application.
So here's what I would suggest. I would suggest taking your whole wish list, mm-hmm. and giving it to me, and then I will take it to United Way, because City of Medford and United Way and me, City of Ashland, we'll all meet together to talk about what we want it, how we want it to be different. And then sometimes in those discussions, Medford will be like, oh yeah, that would work better for us too. Or United Way can give us feedback and say that this is what we heard from our process, and they would be happy with it too. So I would say, give me your whole wish list, and then I can take it to United Way into that joint meeting, and we can have a discussion about it.
Why did we start combining with United Way in the first place? Because it seems like it's more effort-centric than we are. So why
didn't
we just do our own?
I guess we could do our own. I don't know why. It's just always been that way.
Because we don't need to have that many applicants.
It was a convenient to the applicants that would apply in both places.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have to do two separate, or they would just do one that they could put into two places.
But a lot of times the applications are confusing, mm-hmm. because they're giving us their countywide numbers rather than national numbers. And I think we would get fewer applicants. We get more people focused on Ashland residents, mm-hmm. than if we put out a United Way pass.
Yeah, so we wanted to get that question answered first, and then one of the things that we did agree on is that we really wanted to separate, on the numbers where they do number of Medford or Ashland, we felt like consistently that we weren't clear on those grant applications how many people in Ashland were being served, and so one thing that we definitely wanted to do was to try and separate that. So there are a couple things that we just wanted to bring to you guys and ask, like, is that something that you're in agreement on?
Yes.
Okay. And then the other thing was, there were some things in the budget lines that seemed a bit confusing, and so that was the other area that we kind of wanted to work on a little bit. Would you guys like us to work on that and bring it back to you guys before it goes to you? Would that be good to bring it back in July? Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll do that. And then a couple other things that we talked about that Tom wanted me to bring up was, one was that we talked about the follow-up process for the grant recipients, and we thought that it would maybe be a good idea if in the two-year process, if each one of us took maybe two of the grant recipients and then met with them personally, went and did follow-up at their organization maybe twice a year, because once or twice a year, because that wouldn't be too much of a burden with the amount of people who are on this commission. And then, one, we would build more relationship with them, and then we could really see and ask some more specific questions about how are people being impacted by the funds that are going out.
Mm-hmm. I think that's great.
Would there be some kind of a midterm report? I mean, that they would be specific questions, or they would provide specific data regarding what they're doing, or is this just a conversation?
I think it would be a report. So United Way does do that. They mm-hmm. actually have a group of people, and they meet, go on site, do a tour, talk to them, look at stuff. And we just have never done that. But I can get the materials that they have.
Because mm-hmm. it's one thing to have a conversation. I think relationships are great.
Right.
But it's really easy to speak real positively, but in generalities, and you really don't know what progress they're making. On the other end, we have them do a report. Mm-hmm. You're actually asking them to keep track of data and be able to give you some data.
So I could do a couple things, and it's totally up to you. I can talk with Jan at United Way and see if she could come and talk to this group about their process, because they have a pretty robust process. You don't want Jan to come to... Or
I would just
I can get the materials.
Them, right?
Okay.
I mean,
we're going to
be here for an hour doing that.
Yeah, I like the idea of doing numbers. I think I absolutely agree. Yeah. I think that we should have statistics from our grant recipients of how our money is being utilized. And so my thought process is that it's both that we're giving them something to give back to us mm-hmm. that has this is. You know, the number of people that we've helped, like just statistics, however we want that to look. But then we also go and meet with them. Mm-hmm. So it's both.
So in the past, the complaints we've had is that for such a small amount of money,
correct.
It's burdensome on small organizations that don't have a lot of staff to compile those reports,
right.
except during the grant application process. So we might want to set a financial limit. Anybody
that's what I was saying.
Receive
$10,000
or more gives
okay.
us a yeah. report. Mm-hmm. And this
but it could even be like, it doesn't have to be a huge report. It could even just be some numbers right. that they're giving us. And I think for any organization that is getting grant money, they're probably having to do that anyway because they may be getting grant money mm-hmm. from other places where they have to do it because they're getting a lot more.
Just Rosie, too, Tom, what Tom put together for us when he, you know, he had his little...
He's going to do it again.
Yeah. But yeah. that's the kind of information I'd like to be easier to be able to glean from
right.
the grant application. So what are the number of people in Ashland that you're
right.
serving?
Exactly.
And what is the cost per person to mm-hmm. do what you're saying you're doing? You know, what is that? And I don't know exactly how that... You put that in the grant, but Tom had to really glean it out. It wasn't simple.
Yeah.
Well, one of the, well, you can look backwards and see the cost per thing, but the cost would be cost per how much they requested, not what we gave mm-hmm. them. Mm-hmm. If you put it in the grant, so you just. They can tell you how many people they're serving. They do not know how much money we're funding it for. So the cost per person wouldn't...
I mean, well, it'd be helpful to me if you have this midterm meeting with them to mm-hmm. say, how many people have you actually contacted?
Right.
And show me your log. I mean, show me the people, you know, who you've actually helped.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not so sure that always...
Well, let me get the materials from United Way, yeah. and we'll bring them to the next meeting, and we can sort of brainstorm about what those questions would be, maybe based on what they're doing already.
So the last little thing, just this was an idea that Tom had. He wanted the commission to consider prioritizing, say, one item like affordable housing or mental health care or something, and then think about setting aside a certain amount of grant money to make sure that that got supported every 2 years. Like he had, his suggestion was, he said, what if we said like $50,000 will go into childcare? So it was just something that he kind of wanted to throw out there, maybe for people to think about, discuss, and give some feedback when he's at the next meeting.
Good. So hearing none, we'll just proceed with where we are on that committee and a bit more.
So, yeah, so we will work on a revised application and bring it to the July meeting.
Yeah. Exactly. And if you want to send it to me,
and I'll send it to you. Yes, okay.
Okay.
Thanks, Eric.
7 minutes to go. And do you have a staff?
You know, the only update report? I would say is that I went to the Project Community Connect event this year, as I do every year. I don't know if any of you made it. It was really fun, as always. And this year, for the first time in a long time, we did not have the judges. They have separated the judges out of that event. And I don't know if you guys knew this, but at this event in the past, it sort of worked over the years that we would be able to have judges there and people could come and get their fines. Either just taken away or take care of some of the legal issues that they had. And it became a huge, huge draw to the point where last year, I mean, every year we tried to figure out a way to be able to accommodate everybody. And, you know, of course, the judges have to be in a separate space, and then there's internet needs. So there's a bunch of things that happen like that logistically that are challenging. And last year it ended up, it was a good system, but we were overwhelmed by people.
Like 400 people or something, all trying to see a judge.
And they were there at, you know, 7 in the morning, lined up, waiting.
Did they sign up?
They did sign up. So they got numbers, and then they, you know, that they would call.
But they didn't sign up previous to the event.
No, it had to do it at the day of the event. And so it, honestly, it was just overwhelming, kind of overwhelmed our event. And so they decided that they really need to have a separate event just for the judges, right, and that they need to do it twice a year.
They do it once a year, it's not enough. At least they used to do it up in Portland, but they had everybody sign up weeks or days ahead of time. And because our organization up in Portland used to be the signer-uppers.
Oh.
But it was huge. I mean, there's so many, and it did so much good.
Absolutely. I mean, it was amazing, amazing outcomes, how many fines got waived or removed. I mean, it was amazing. Mm-hmm. But, like I said, it became so many people were there just for that. Not that they weren't, like, doing the other pieces, but it just became overwhelming trying to figure out how to accommodate everyone. And, in fact, they couldn't see everyone last year, and so then at the end they had this whole backlog of people who we had to move out of the building because we had to put everything away because the floor cleaners were coming, and then they had to stand outside, and we had to move a tent and move chairs, and then someone had to be there, and they had to reschedule appointments for them to actually come down to the courthouse another day. It was just a nightmare.
But how are they making up for it? You're saying they're going to meet twice, or they're going to have a special event?
So they're going to have their own events, I guess, and that's not something that we're...
Is anybody following up?
You know, I think Jan probably is, because she's the committee, Jan from United Way is the Project Community Connect subcommittee chair. And so it was a deliberate decision to do this, and I think she'll probably follow up with it.
I hope so, because, I mean, it's really...
It was important. It was really probably the most important piece. But I have to say, I mean, Connie Wilkerson was there, and the interesting thing that happened at this year's event, we had way less people, by the way, because they didn't come to see the judges.
Yeah.
And so we ended up having a lot of food, because we ran out of food last year, too.
How many people about?
You know, I'm not entirely sure. I want to say around 500, whereas last year we had like 800
or
more. It was huge. So this year there was something going on, and everybody sort of tuned into it. This woman had these two children, and at some point, like, they got food, and then the mom was gone. And so one of the navigators who were – we had all these navigators from Living on Track, who were the people who essentially volunteer for the day to help. And so one of the ladies there, you know, had kept her eye on these kids and was like, wait a minute, where's the mom? And so she came over, and someone said, I think she's out at the pet station, which is always outside. But it turned out that there was something going on. There was like a mom, a grandma, and the two girls. And the mom was acting really strangely. And then they got out of her daughters that daddy was beating up mommy last night. And then, you know, we got kicked out of the house, and we had to stay away. So, I mean, it was just the total, like, oh, my gosh. So Connie was able to get in this woman on the list and get her and her girls into emergency domestic violence housing that night.
Wow.
I know. Yeah. It was like a miracle. So that was like the best outcome of the day, because, I mean, as we were watching this unfold, you know, everyone was sort of like, wait a minute, what's going on? And, you know, what's going on with this mom and these girls? And everybody's acting really weird. You know, we've got security people there now because over the years we've had a few incidents. So it's like, don't leave children alone in this venue. Right.
Okay, so general announcements for 2 minutes. Well, if anybody wants to see the bills that are still left in the legislature, I've got a list of them. But other than that, I guess we are adjourned.
Do you want to email them to us? Or
what?
How do you see them?
I need your mail address.
You can't email them. Do you have a paper? Or?
I've got a paper here.
Do you want me to take it and scan it and email it out?
Please. I'd love to get it.
Do you want me to copy it and take it and email it out?
But I could email it to you.
Oh, okay. And then email.
And then we'll email it out to people. It, but it has a lot of numbers with general headings. There's 10 or so in the housing ones, and that's the one that we should really look at. But just remember, it's not political. It's just housing bills that are still available.
Information.
Housing in the news. We actually have a cover for that to cover the
All right. Okay.
And we have a quorum and join.
Oh.
And so we're going to, the people that are on the committee stay here, and we will just for a moment see if we can find a meeting time.
Is anyone going to be gone in July?
Not the 10th.
Jackie? Okay. I'll be here in July. I'll be gone in August, but I can announce that it.
Okay.
In July. In July.
Okay.
Not a problem.